Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, and my goal is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a healthy, loving relationship that lasts. So call in, share your dating and relationship stories, ask the questions that keep you awake at night, and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategies.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host, live this time. And if you're joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. I'm really thrilled to have you here. On this show, surprising new data from the Census Bureau tells us that married Americans are in the minority for the first time ever. Does this mean that marriage is on its way out as a social institution? Well, I'm going to give you the rundown on all the information and what it really means. That's coming up shortly in the show. Also on this show, how do you know if someone is pacing a relationship or if he is stalling out on you? We're going to explore that question. That's also coming very quickly in the show. It's a complicated question. It's difficult sometimes to know, but I'm going to give you some ways to actually be able to identify it and actually be able to tell if someone is pacing the relationship or just stalling out. But before I get into those two issues, I have someone who's looking for advice. So this is an email I'm getting from Johara. She writes to me this question. She says, "Dear Nina, I'm 55 years old, and after 10 years of waiting for a wounded guy with more problems than I can list, I've been single now for 5 years, and I want to work on finding a lasting, loving relationship leading to marriage. I read Temptations of the Single Girl, and I want to know, is this written also for my age group, or should I modify anything? I also have your book, Be Your Own Dating Service, and I'm just starting it today. At my age, I've pretty much given up hope of being able to find the right guy, but I hope I don't have to with your help." Well, Johara, you're asking a really good question, and I want you to know you're not the first person to ask me that question. I've heard that over the years more times than I can count. Should I have hope for finding the right person? But let me go back to your first question and do that one first. The part about, do the principles in the book Temptations of the Single Girl apply at your age? I say absolutely. They apply at any age. I've had 18-year-olds read it, love it, and apply the principles, and I've had women in their 60s write me and tell me it changed their life. It really doesn't matter. The principles are all about dating smart. It's about looking at character first, not just your hormones and how tingly he makes you feel, but what is his character? Putting off sex before you determine whether or not someone is right for you, because you realize that sex bonds you to a guy, and it doesn't make sense to do that until you really know who he is and what his intentions are for a relationship with you. Dating with integrity, another principle in the book, pacing relationships, all of these principles and the other principles in the book apply. They make sense no matter what your age is. So, no, I wouldn't say that you should alter any of it. You shouldn't modify any of it. You should follow it if you really want to have a successful relationship. So, but the other part of your question, I think, is pointing to a very fundamental need, and that is the need for hope. And I'm glad you brought that up because I think it is essential. Once you give up on finding someone right, you have already begun the descent into settling for less than a good man and less than a good love. And that's because beliefs have a way of determining what we see. So if you don't believe it's possible to find someone right for you, and believe me, that kind of negative thinking can strike you at any age, but if you don't believe it's possible, you will tend to attract experiences that reinforce the belief. We call that a self-fulfilling prophecy. It also will have a lot to do with what you're able to see. I've known men and women in my long career as a relationship coach, as a therapist. I can't tell you the number of people that I've known who wouldn't know a good relationship if it came up and bit them on the butt. Why? Not because they're not interested, but because they've given up hope. Experiences teach us what the world is like. And so if every experience you've ever had is of a relationship that ultimately failed, you will tend to believe that that's just the way it is. But on the other side of the coin are the people who have had really good relationships. I've known people who were married for decades to somebody that they absolutely loved, had a wonderful relationship with that person, and then that person passed away. And people who have had that experience of life, decades of a really good relationship, do not tend to stay single for very long. And the reason for that is because their overwhelming experience of life is that relationships are good. So once they find themselves single again after an appropriate grieving period, then those people tend to get up and look around, and really often very quickly, once they get past grief, they very quickly find somebody to love and be loved by again. So what you believe influences what you see, and it influences what you attract. So you have to believe that it's possible to find someone who is right for you if you want to attract someone who is good for you. Here's something that I can tell you is an absolute truth. No matter what your age, it is possible to find someone right for you. I have seen men and women at all ages find someone to love and be loved by, get married, and be happy. I've had examples of people in their 80s, whether it's reconnecting with someone that they knew before or meeting someone new and getting married, getting remarried after being married, after maybe a divorce or a death or whatever. So regardless of your stage of life, your age, regardless really of any of your circumstances, it is possible to meet someone who's good and who is good for you. So, you know, and the other thing to keep in mind is that the pool of single people is constantly changing. There are good men out there right now and who are getting a divorce or breaking up a long-term relationship or wife died of cancer or whatever. And in a few months, one of those good men is going to be ready to date again. Will you be open to him when he comes along? Or will you not see him because you're so convinced that those kinds of people just aren't out there? The only difference between the people who do find someone and those who don't is that the ones who do are positive about their lives. They wake up each day overall feeling good about their lives and good about themselves. They believe in love, they believe in relationships, and they are open to meeting new people and having new experiences. These open-hearted people are the ones who succeed, and that can be you. So, Johara, I want to really encourage you to take the steps that you can take to make this more possible for you. In both my books, you will find there's an exercise to guide you in writing a vision statement for your life and your future relationship. Use that exercise to implant in your brain, in your consciousness, in your psyche, the image of what is possible, a real relationship, a good relationship. These exercises are powerful. Once you write a vision statement, believe in it, and then you will begin attracting the people and circumstances to make it happen. So, Johara, take heart, be encouraged, and take these steps. All right, something that's in the news this week. For the first time ever, married couples are no longer the majority. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, married couples now represent 48% of all U.S. households, and that is down from 52% in the last census. So that's a landmark piece of data for the first time ever. Married couples are in the minority compared to other kinds of households, which would obviously be single, divorced, widowed, never married, and so on and so forth. So there are two reasons that this is happening, and one that you have to understand is that we have an expanding older population. So now we're talking about my age group, the baby boom generation. There are more of us than there are people who are younger than we are. And that population is more likely to be divorced or widowed later in life. And at the same time, the other thing that's happening is much younger people in their 20s are putting off getting married until later in life, until they are older. So if you look at the census data going back a few decades ago, people in their 20s were mostly married. That means most of them were married before age 30. And today's 20-something, the minority of them are married before age 30. So those are two things that are influencing this data. And so, and the median age for first marriages has climbed since the 1960s, when men got married at age 23 and women at 20. Now men are waiting until they're 28 and women are holding off until 26. So that's one of the reasons that you're seeing this kind of information. Does this mean that marriage is on its way out as an institution? Well, I don't think so. And here's why. Because about 39% of Americans say that marriage is becoming obsolete. That's according to a Pew Research Center study that was published in November of last year. And if you look back historically, only 28% in 1978 thought marriage was becoming obsolete. So a lot more people are believing that. But here's the rest of the story. In spite of this widely held belief, the notion that marriage is becoming obsolete, 39% of Americans believe that. But the same research study found that the vast majority of people who are not married want to be married, or they want to be in some kind of a committed relationship that very closely resembles marriage, even if they don't actually get married in the traditional sense. So what you're seeing is the paradox of people believing that marriage is becoming obsolete, yet still on a very personal level, deep down, most people want to be married. Here's why I think that is happening. It's easy to see why people would think marriage is becoming obsolete, because overwhelmingly what you see in the media is all the data and all the information on broken marriages, broken relationships. Every week it's another celebrity couple getting a divorce. Every week it's another relationship down the tubes. Every week we hear the statistics on divorce. It is true that one out of two marriages will eventually fail. That's still the current statistic. It's depressing. I mean, it really isn't. We're not seeing good examples of healthy marriages. We don't see that in the media. And the reason for that is simple, because good marriages are kind of boring. I mean, there's no drama in that. If somebody made a television show about a healthy married couple, it would be a show that wouldn't get but a handful of viewers, because it would be so boring. And I don't mean boring that being in a healthy marriage is undesirable, because you would be so bored with that relationship you wouldn't be able to bear it. What I mean is that for something to watch in the media, it isn't exciting. It isn't drama. And we love our drama in this culture. We watch television for excitement and drama. So the media is pretty smart. They know how to get us to watch stuff, and the way that they do that is to give us excitement and drama. Well, you just don't get that with a happy, stable marriage, so therefore we don't see those in the media. What you see is weddings. We have an obsession with weddings in this culture. And, of course, weddings have very little to do with marriage. It's really just the day when you basically speak your vows in a public venue. And it can be an absolutely wonderful day. My husband and I celebrated our 5th wedding anniversary this past weekend, and we are still very happily married and very much in love 5 years later. And one of the things we did was kind of relive our wedding day, because it was truly one of the most magical, enchanting, happy days of our lives together. But that was because of the nature of our relationship. That wasn't because we spent tens of thousands of dollars on a wedding, which we did not. So the reason that people don't see marriage as in the same way that they did at one time, the reason people see it as becoming obsolete is because of what we see in the media. I mean, in a nutshell, that is what is causing that. But the truth is that deep down, most people want to be married. Here's why. Because if you look at how we are wired as human beings, the way we are wired is to bond, to form those kinds of relationships. We are first and foremost social beings. That's who we are. We're always going to seek, we always have, and we always will seek to belong to groups and communities, and we seek to belong as a mate to one special person. We are wired for that kind of relationship, and we will therefore always, as a species, find ways to bond, to love and be loved, to bring children into that kind of a union, if children is what we want. We're always going to find a way to have a social institution where two people come together and promise to spend their lives together. And the forms of those social institutions by which we demonstrate that kind of relationship, whether we call it marriage or whether we call it something else, those forms may change and evolve. I think that is certainly the case. That's what we're seeing happening today. But regardless of what you call it or how you describe it or how it's put together, we have always, as a species, had marriage relationships or marriage-like relationships, and we always will. Most of us will always want that. So that's what I think about that piece of information. It's interesting data, but I don't think it's telling us that marriage is on its way out. All right, this is Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host, and we're going to be right back after this break.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Love Strategies, and this is Nina Atwood. Now I have somebody else who's writing to me about this question. How do you tell if someone is pacing a relationship or if they are stalling? Chantal writes this question. Hello, Ms. Atwood. I've recently started reading your book, Temptations of the Single Girl. Everything rings so true. I have been able to find healing and closure, knowing the mistakes I have made and how to correct them. 2 months ago, I was dumped by a man who promised to marry me and love me forever. He was one of those emotionally unavailable guys who was insecure. But recently, I started dating again. I was hesitant, but I thought, what the heck? He's polite, thoughtful, intelligent, punctual, but... Well, we've been on 3 dates now to eat and drink, and he always wants to grab a bite and a drink. I let him know nicely that I was really over just eating with him. It's hard to assess his character if it's always in one setting, right? The dates have been infrequent, which I know is good, but they have been just to eat. Until today, he has only texted me. I hear from him every couple of days with a hello or how are you, and he takes forever to answer me back unless we're going to meet that day. We had lunch today, and we're supposed to meet this evening to do something. He had no plans. He asked me to find something I would like to do, whatever your heart desires, he said. And when I suggested a movie, he asked if we were going to be able to do dinner and drinks later. He seems to always want to meet to eat and drink. I'm confused with how to read him. This is all new to me because I usually dive right in. I am annoyed with the whole situation, but I'm unsure if it's just because I'm not ready to date or I'm annoyed because things are progressing rather slowly. There's pacing and then there is stalling. I find I enjoy just staying at home and watching movies or reading by myself. I'm worried I'm hiding and I don't want to become a recluse. What do you think? Well, Chantal, you're asking a good question. And you're right. There is a huge difference between pacing, which I highly recommend, and stalling. Stalling usually shows up as a reluctance to maintain contact or to move a relationship forward to the next step. And 3 dates is really not very much if you're pacing. But if you're the dive in at breakneck speed type, 3 dates can seem like an eternity. What I'm wondering is, what is it about dinner and a drink that annoys you? Is it that he isn't sweeping you off your feet at this point? Is it that the conversations over dinner are just too boring? Here's a few things I want you to think about as you are exploring this situation so that you can try to come to your own determination about whether he's pacing or stalling. So, first of all, one of the goals of the initial couple of months of dating is to get to know people without sex. Why is that? Because once you sleep with someone, the choosing is over for you and the chasing is over for him. You're in it all the way, and the opportunity to find out about character and emotional availability is past. Keeping sex out of the picture for a number of weeks and preferably months enables you to really check out your compatibility. Having dinner and a drink means you are face-to-face and have the opportunity to ask questions of one another, to open up and self-disclose. You can read body language. This is a real opportunity for you, for both of you, and I would suggest that you treat it that way. Now, the other issue is who leads and who follows. In the early stages of a relationship, I find that it works better if the guy leads. The reason for that is because it allows you to see the level of his intention and attention. So if his lead is uncertain, inconsistent, or lacking in energy, that tells you the relationship is going to be the same. So let him lead, even if that means dinner and a drink for a while. If you find over time that he is not an interesting person to you, move on, but give it a few more dates. I just don't think you've had enough time to know. Now, while you're on the date, be sure and use that time to ask really good questions. You shouldn't just be having dinner and a drink and just hanging out there. You should really be using that time to discover who the person is in front of you. I think one of the very best questions for bringing about self-disclosure and revealing character is this one. Here's the question. How long has it been since your last relationship, and how did it end? I'm going to say that again. I think it's a really important question. How long since your last relationship, and how did it end? So that kind of a question really invites or encourages people to open up about the past. And I think you learn two things there. You learn a little bit about how much the other person is willing to self-disclose, and I think you also learn a lot about how emotionally available the person is. Because obviously, if he answers that question with, well, last week and she threw all my stuff on the front lawn and burned it, well, he's not very available, is he? But if he says, well, it's been about 6 months and, you know, we really worked hard on trying to make our relationship work and we even went to counseling together, but at the end of the day, it wasn't working any longer, and we, you know, it was bittersweet, but we parted with wishing each other well, and it was, you know, it was as good a parting as it could possibly be, and I'm really ready to meet someone wonderful now and move forward. That would be somebody who's probably emotionally available. So you use questions like that to move your conversations past the news, weather, and sports talk, that superficial talk that keeps everyone emotionally safe. It's much better to rock the boat a little bit. Take some risks. Because the goal is intimacy. And by that, I mean the phonetic version of the word. Intimacy. I'm not talking about sex at this stage of the relationship. So here's another thought about this particular relationship. The guy you're dating sounds like he may be grounded and stable, and you just may not be used to that. Boredom may be your enemy as you move forward and establish healthier dating patterns. I want you to practice having dates that don't blow your socks off. And use those dates to be intensely curious about other people. Develop curiosity. Develop really good questions and good listening skills. And while you're doing that, it's okay to date someone for a while, a handful of dates, and end up liking him but not falling in love. That may not be the perfect guy for you. The one you're dating now, he may not be the perfect guy for you. But while you are dating him, let this be school for you on how to date without all that intensity that you probably had and got burned by in the past. So that's it for you, Chantal, and everyone else listening who's ever wondered, how do you know if someone is stalling or if they are pacing? And I hope it was helpful for you to learn that marriage is not on its way out, in spite of the information, in spite of the statistics, I really think there's a deeper story going on there. Marriage has been around for an awfully long time. It's going to be around for a long time still to come. So I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. And I want to give a very special acknowledgement to my wonderful, loving, and devoted husband, Mark. We just celebrated 5 wonderful years. Happy anniversary again, sweetheart. Be sure and join us again for more love strategies and stick around for this message.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more love strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.